There's a knock at the door as the postman delivers the mail. You think, what could that be? What could be so important that he would actually knock on my door? I'm not expecting an Amazon package or anything, right? So you go to retrieve the envelopes, and it's the usual smattering of credit card offers, coupons from restaurants you've never been to, and other odds and ends, but then you notice something. There's somebody standing right out there. They look kind of familiar. So you open the door, and they hand you an embossed envelope. And it's hand-lettered in calligraphy with beautiful font and expensive ink. And you open it up and you find an invitation. And it reads like this. You're invited to the lunch of a lifetime, a life-changing experience. From now on, nothing will ever be the same. The location? Your house. The time? Well, right about now. RSVP, ASAP. By the way, I've hoped you've cleaned. Have you ever had somebody invite themselves over to your house? Has that ever been something that happened to you? I've had that experience a couple of times. When we did campus ministry, suddenly there'd just be and there were a student or two or seven standing right outside of our door at whatever time they kind of felt like hanging out. And when I was single, that was okay. When I was married, not quite as great. Or one day we had been invited to a play date with one of our neighbors, but somehow the wires got crossed, and about 2 minutes before we were planning to walk over, the doorbell rang, and they were coming to our house instead. And suddenly, you're doing that mad dash. Most of you know it. You're getting the laundry off the couch. You are shutting the doors to the bedroom so nobody else can see the junk. You're hiding the dirty dishes away in a cabinet somewhere. You're fluffing the pillows and lighting a candle and quickly shoving all of the shoes into the mudroom because we don't want anybody to think that we don't have it all together, that our house isn't from William Sonoma's catalog, because heaven forbid that they would see a mislaid pair of socks or maybe even a pair of underwear sitting out on the couch. Now, most of you know what I'm talking about. Because entertaining hospitality should be a joy, but it often fills us with dread. We have a lot of work that has to get done. We have to make everybody in the whole family miserable just to make it look like our house is always this way. Today's story finds us in the house of a man named Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is a tax collector in the city of Jericho. And what do we know about Zacchaeus? Somebody tell me, what do we know? Nobody sang the song, but everybody said he's short, right? Zacchaeus was a... How would you like to go through the rest of eternity having everybody think you are this tiny little individual, right? And a wee little man was he. That's it. That's really all we tend to know. And it's the perfect VBS story, isn't it? Because that's where most of us hear it. Why is it the perfect story? Because kids are short. And they understand the world. No, I just had one glare at me. I'm sorry. Okay. But kids are shorter than the rest of us, mostly. And they kind of understand a world in which they can't always see. And they can't push their way to the front. They can't jump over. And it's got this memorable little song, and it's a cute little story, and you can read the whole thing in about a minute and a half. And it's this beautiful story, too, of somebody who goes to incredible, great lengths to meet Jesus. So it's the perfect story for kids sitting through a lesson. And in the story that Landon read for us this morning, we learn a few more things about Zacchaeus than he was just short, although that's what all of us are going to remember. All right, so he is Jewish. His name kind of clues us in, but he is a son of Abraham, and he is also a tax collector. Not just any tax collector, though. He is a chief tax collector. He's the guy at the top of the pyramid. He's the point of the Ponzi scheme. Because tax collectors made their money because they would take a bid and say, we need X number of dollars from here, and I think I can get you a little bit more than that. But then they would collect even more than they needed to pay off their tax bill, because how else are they going to make their money? But if you wanted to get a tax collector job, most of them had to work for somebody else, somebody who had power and position, who could get you that job. And so there's a little bit of paying that guy off so that you can then steal from all the other people. So Zacchaeus isn't just the guy walking around knocking on the doors. He's the guy keeping the books and making sure everybody knocking on the doors is getting more than they need. And because of all of that, Zacchaeus is probably wealthier than anybody at the time even knew or imagined. And there's something else that we learn in our story. It's not stated, but it is implied, because he is hated by his neighbors. The people of Jericho despise this man. Think about it. Zacchaeus has heard that Jesus is coming to town and through town. And Zacchaeus is a wealthy man. He has power and position, money, status, and standing. And money opens a lot of doors. If you've got enough money, you can get a seat at that crowded restaurant. If you've got enough money, you can get a ticket to any event that you want. But nobody is willing to give Zacchaeus a spot along the side of the road so he can see Jesus. That's how much they hate him. This is standing room only, but not for you. You are not welcome here. Zacchaeus can't see over their heads. He can't jump high enough. He can't buy, bribe, or barter his way to a better position. But if Zacchaeus is anything, he's a problem solver. He didn't get to where he was in life without some quick thinking and ingenuity. So Zacchaeus looks down the street, and he sees a sycamore tree. And he thinks that's perfect, because a sycamore tree's trunk is short, and so am I. And the branches go out wide, and I could maybe climb across them and lay out on them. This is going to be perfect. Now, what's his motivation for all of this? Well, Luke doesn't fully really tell us. We don't know what it is that makes this man want to go out there, except all Luke says is this: he wanted to see who Jesus was. For many in that crowd, Zacchaeus had everything that they could ever want, everything that they had ever dreamed of. Here's a man who has money and power, position, fame, or infamy, which is pretty much the same thing. Money can't buy you love, it can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you stuff, and that's a pretty good start, most of them would think. And we live in a world, as they did, in a world that desires a name and fame. According to a recent survey, if you ask children under the age of 18 what they most want to be when they grow up, answer number 2 and answer number 3 were social media, influencer. I'm out of touch, evidently. Social media influencer, and number 3, YouTube star. Because we live in a world where people want power and position and fame. And Zacchaeus has everything that most people will want. But I think he finds it lacking. Something is still missing. And so he's out there on this road to Jericho. John Stuart Mill was an English philosopher and writer in the 19th century. He was a religious skeptic. And he writes in his autobiography about asking himself an important question one day. Suppose all the objects in life were realized, that all the changes in institutions and opinions which you were looking forward to can be completely affected at this very instant. If you had everything you could ever want and desire, he says, would this be a great joy and happiness to you? It's his question of the day. And here's what he discovered. An irrepressible self-consciousness distinctly answered, no. And at this, my heart sank within me. The whole foundation on which my life was constructed fell down. All my happiness was to have been found in continual pursuit of this end, of getting everything I had wanted. But I realized that end had ceased to charm. And how could there ever be again any interest in the means? I seemed to have nothing left to live for. If you have everything your heart desires, would it be enough? Because money, fame, fortune, power, position aren't everything. Zacchaeus has discovered this too. So he goes in search of something more meaningful. And what better place to start, Zacchaeus must think, than this rabbi who's coming to town. Because at this point, Jesus' name and fame had spread far and wide. He was known as a great rabbi, a prophet, a healer, an exorcist. There was no problem he couldn't solve, no question he didn't seem equipped to answer, no disease too dire, and no demon too dangerous. Some were whispering that this guy might be the Messiah, but, you know, Zacchaeus wasn't going to get caught up in politics he didn't care an awful lot about. But what he did know was that Jesus was a great religious leader. And unlike so many others he had met along the way, Jesus actually practiced what he preached. And so, Zacchaeus goes looking because he also heard that Jesus was open to people like him. He had heard through his friends and colleagues that Jesus had already treated one tax collector, a man by the name of Levi, to a dinner. And now Levi followed along behind Jesus. Maybe he thinks Jesus would spend some time with me too. So there he was, climbing a tree. It's definitely not dignified. It's not for an adult or a person of his position. But Zacchaeus is willing to go to great lengths. And the story continues. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up to him and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." And Jesus invites himself over. He sends an invitation. He already knows Zacchaeus. He knows his name. He knows who he is, although they've never met in person. But he knows his story. And I think Jesus can see his potential whenever he will encounter salvation. And so Jesus sends an embossed invitation right there, delivered in person. You're invited to the lunch of a lifetime. A life-changing experience. From now on, nothing will be the same. The location is your house. The time, today. Like, right now. RSVP, ASAP. By the way, I hope you've cleaned. Jesus must stay at his house. This isn't a request. It's not wishful hope. Jesus is stating it's a necessity. It's imperative. It's got to happen. Why is it imperative? Who is it imperative for? Well, for Zacchaeus, because his life is about to change for the better. But it's also imperative for Jesus, because Jesus said the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. If you flip through the pages of the New Testament, you're going to find only three times where we're told what the Son of Man came to do. So why did the Son of Man come? Well, he finishes the sentence. Jesus finishes that sentence three different ways. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Why did the Son of Man come? Jesus said, well, for the Son of Man has come eating and drinking. Why did the Son of Man come? For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save what was lost. These are Jesus' imperatives. This is what he came to do. And you find all three bundled together in this story. Jesus comes to one who needs to be won back from these false idols that have consumed his time and attention, that has stolen his heart and robbed him of life and joy. And in order to do that, Jesus comes for a meal. He sits down because it's over a meal often where true conversation happens. And Jesus came to someone who was lost. And Zacchaeus, rather than worrying about whether or not a pair of socks is laying out or shoving the shoes into the corner, he came down at once and he welcomed him gladly. And the people who are watching begin to mutter and gossip, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." Which is true. That's exactly what he's done. That's what Jesus always tends to do. That's his MO. Throughout his ministry, Jesus stopped and ate with all kinds of people, sinners and Pharisees, rich and poor, the popular and the wallflowers, the lofty and the lowly, the life of the party, and the people no one would have invited in the first place. Throughout Luke's gospel, we find that Jesus is actually quite a foodie. Jesus stops and has meals 50 different times in the gospel of Luke. He is always going to one, at one, or leaving one. Because Jesus uses these meals as an opportunity for nourishment on so many different levels. It's a place in which he breaks down barriers. He brings communities together. He radically crosses all the boundaries of their economy and their social lives. And he even gives opposing enemies the opportunity to sit down together. So Jesus is always at a meal. He goes to lunch with the chief tax collector, someone that the entire town hates, because it will give him the opportunity to reach a group that everybody else has written off. Because you can hear them muttering it outside. You know those tax collectors, they're a bunch of crooks. How could Jesus ever sit with somebody like that? Doesn't he know that bad company corrupts good character? If Jesus is willing to sit with them, then what does that say about him? So here's Jesus and his disciples, primarily surrounded by Zacchaeus, his household, and his friends. And I want to think about how weird that's got to be for just a second. Because it's hard to invite people over from different spheres of your life, isn't it? We recently had a birthday party for Lydia, and we had families from here at church and families from her school and a couple of neighbors, and people from all different backgrounds, from different states, and even a couple from different countries. It was quite a diverse crew, and some of them knew a few others, but nobody knew everyone. Not even us. We hadn't met some of those people before. It was really interesting. And it's hard enough to keep a conversation going lively and interesting when you all know each other. But complete strangers who you don't have a clue as to whether they have anything in common or not. So I wish that we could know what was being said and what was happening at that dinner. What did they talk about? How did they keep conversation going? How did these people from all these different walks of life sit down and eat together? And where did that conversation go? Now, we have no idea what words are used, but we hear the incredible outcome. Because something amazing happens here. Zacchaeus repents. Now, he isn't just confessing his sin, although he kind of does that. It isn't just a change of heart, although he has that too. Zacchaeus' repentance is also about restoration. He says, "I'm going to make amends." And he does so lavishly. In Jewish culture, we're told that if you gave away 20% of your income, you were considered incredibly, outlandishly generous. And here's Zacchaeus saying, "Half of it, I'm going to give to the poor. Because I'm giving it to God." And then restitution was usually about the price taken or another 10% on top. It's an eye for an eye. It's a cow for a cow. But he says, if I stole from anybody, I'm going to pay back four times what it was. And the answer is, by the way, he stole from everybody in that town. And what makes him go to such incredible lengths? Well, in the midst of that meal, he experiences the extravagant grace of God. And all we know is by the end, he's calling Jesus his Lord. Somehow around that table, he experienced the greatness of God, and he is a changed man. He was lost, but now he's found, and nothing will ever be the same. So I want you to ask yourself, where do you find yourself in this story? Maybe you're like Zacchaeus. Maybe you've spent your time, your life, your energy, your effort pursuing wealth and position and power, and you've had your heart set on that one goal, And maybe you're still pursuing it. Or maybe you've fallen and come up short. Or maybe you've achieved it only to realize it doesn't fully satisfy. That you had everything you ever thought you could want, but it wasn't enough, and you're starting to wonder what else might be out there. And just like Zacchaeus, Jesus wants to be invited into your life. It's necessary, it's imperative, he says, but it's up to you. There's this little verse that he is actually writing to Christians, but he says this, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Here I am. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me." He's saying, I'm right here. I'd love to have this relationship, but it's completely up to you. Jesus came to seek and to save you and me, but the choice is up to you and me. Or maybe you don't see yourself as Zacchaeus, but I'm hoping you don't see yourself as one of the crowd, actively keeping somebody from coming to Jesus or muttering about those who come who don't fit the mold. But if so, take some time to examine where you are and why. And to be fair, I've been in that position before. I've been a part of that crowd. Sometimes I don't want people to see Jesus, or at least through me, because I don't always want to stand out and be different. So sometimes I hide my faith, and because of that, others might not be able to encounter Jesus. So if you find yourself in that crowd, then I want to encourage you, be bold, create space, be open to conversation, live out loud with your faith so that others might be able to encounter Jesus too and encounter him through you. But I want to ask you to do something a little strange this morning. I want to ask you to be a tree. Like that guy, okay. Or maybe not like that guy, it's okay. Be a tree. Because Zacchaeus ran to the tree in order to get closer to Jesus. The tree was there, it was available, it was perfect for what was needed, it was right on his level, and the invitation was open. The tree provided the perfect encounter that changed Zacchaeus' life. For many of us, all we need to do is to be available with people at their level so that they can come and see Jesus. So go out and be a tree. Help somebody come to see Jesus through you. One way in which you can do that is through our Friends Day that we've been talking about on September 22nd. We would love for you to just go out and invite the people that you know, the people that you've been praying for, the people in your life that you're not certain know Jesus or have been able to spend much time with him recently, and say, hey, I'd love for you to come and be with us on that Sunday. And it's a great opportunity for you to just be invitational and create a space in which somebody can encounter Jesus for the first time. And it might just change everything. And there's going to be food there too, so that sounds pretty good. But it's the perfect opportunity for us to invite people that we've been praying for. But how can you be a tree? Well, I think you do it through prayer, through creating relationships, through just being available and talking about life, about telling people God loves you too, whether you say the words or you just show it through your actions. I love Jesus' statement there at the end, how he summarizes the whole thing. For the Son of Man came to do what? To seek and to save those who were lost. Which is the story of all of us. At some point, we've all been lost. We've all chased after other things and realized we're not where we want to be. And no matter where you are, how far you've gone, what you've done, to God, it doesn't matter. What he wants you to know is that I came to seek and to save you because I love you that much. This morning, we're going to offer a time of invitation. If you want to respond in some way, if you want to be prayed for this morning, if you want to say, hey, I want to learn more about this, if you just want to know more about who Jesus is, or you say, today's the day I want to give my life to him, we'd walk you through how to do that. We would love for you to encounter Jesus today. Whether that's through prayer, through baptism, through a renewal of your faith, we're going to make this time and space available. If you are not one who wants to respond publicly, Feel free to come and see me afterwards. I'd love to talk with you as well. May God bless you today. Go out and be a tree. Let's sing together.